The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Welcome to Taking It Slow. This is a brand new podcast about the PBSL, and we're going to start off our inaugural podcast here with the 2017 season. This is your commissioner, Wig Nosey. At least at the present time, this is going to be a solo podcast, and we'll see if this gains any traction or any popularity if we want to bring in a second. But at least to get us started here, I'd like to take a minute to let you know this podcast is being recorded after the 2017 preseason sim, but before the first regular season sim. My hope is to do about one of these each week during the regular season. This will let us react to trades, react to sim results, injuries, and everything. Maybe not quite as they happen, but on a regular basis. And it also gives a platform for any other random thoughts I might have about the league. And I'll start with the random thought that it seems to me over the last couple of seasons, the league has been trending toward what I would say is a more parity-driven league. We have had a number of super teams in the past. Even though the Hawks and the Warriors won a lot of games last year, neither of them wound up making the finals. We're seeing a couple of teams tank each year, but there's no mass exodus to tank for specific draft classes. The incoming college players have holes in their game, so there's no longer the ability to build up a team of godlike players across the board. So I think we're going to have the opportunity to see things flatten a little bit. I think you're going to have teams will still be good, and you'll still have stars, and you'll still have the favorites each year. But I think the league is trending a little bit more toward parity. And one of the other side effects of the college system, and we've even seen it the last 2-3 years with the created players, or with the NBA players, rather. The NBA players that we have had the last few years that have been hitting restricted free agency, because they're so close to now, are players that have not been able to reach their potential in real life. So we don't have their real life peaks, which means their peaks based on early season production in their career mean they're weaker overall as players than, you know, say the LeBron James or Kevin Durant's or Steph Curry's, where we've seen their peak. When we're inputting stuff for, let's say, Julius Randle, who, when we input him, I think had one season under his belt in the league, maybe not even a full season. I think it was still a partial season at that time. You're just not going to get the same depth of player because we don't have an accurate representation of where these guys are going to peak. So I think the talent level in the drafts has been a little lower over the last probably 6 seasons, maybe 7. So it's not just with the college players, it's with the NBA players too that hadn't had time yet to reach their prime. And as the talent level drops a little bit, I think that leads us toward teams no longer being willing to just throw a supermax at everybody that moves. Obviously, players like Kevin Love are still going to command a supermax. Anthony Davis will command a supermax. But we've seen a shift in the league from minimum or maximum contracts to a little more of a spread, and I think that will help parity as well, because now you have the opportunity to grab a productive player on something less than a maximum contract, but he's going to have holes in his game. And so mixing and matching the holes, I think, is going to provide a new challenge for Sim League, and I'm excited about that. And the chatter on Skype seems to kind of bear that out, that we do have the sense, I think, that there are no clear favorites, and there's also not a lot of teams that have no shot either. And yes, there are teams that are going to be hard-pressed to make the playoffs, but I don't think we're in danger of seeing a 5-win season. I think the closest we have right now to a team that is just ravaged is probably the Raptors, and that's a consequence of the luxury tax just ripping apart their team because they weren't able to keep anybody because they couldn't offer contracts. And that's, I think, where the luxury tax winds up having teeth. You know, teams can work around some of the penalties of the luxury tax early on because you still have players under contract. You can trade those players to get other players. But once it gets to the point that you're having to re-up your own players and you haven't been able to find takers for them, and you can't re-up them because you're not going to be able to pay the market value, that's when I think it really is going to wind up hurting your team. So it'll be interesting to watch to see if the Grizzlies, for example, try trading off their team. But I'm digressing a little bit. I wanted to make sure that I spent this inaugural podcast taking a look at what happened in the offseason and do it more through the eyes of each team, you know, rather than going through each trade and analyzing winners and losers. I'd rather go through each team as they set up for this season, and in doing so, we'll look at, you know, how did they get there? Was it free agency? Was it trades? Whatever it is. And that's how we can analyze the offseason is team by team. And I know usually what happens in these is we start in the East and we go to the West because that's the way that the index is set up. So I decided I'd be a little bit different. I'm going to start at the bottom of the index, which means the worst team in the Southwest Division, and work my way up. So we'll work our way from the bottom of the Southwest up to the top, and then we'll move on to the Pacific, and so on. So we will start by taking a look at the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks had an interesting offseason. Once again, I think they were swinging for the fences, trying to bring in somebody next to Bradley Beal. The Mavericks are in an odd place. They've been shopping Bradley Beal for a while. They've kind of been resisting going into the rebuild. They've been able to stay competitive, but I think now they're getting to the point where they're committing to their rebuild. They did pick up Gerald Green in the offseason on a $10 million deal, and Anthony Morrow on a $15 million deal, and Aaron Aflalo on a $30 million deal, which I don't know that I necessarily would have gone $30 million for Aaron Aflalo, but I think they did the smart thing late in free agency is, you know, we have a whole lot of money laying around. Let's put out some contracts to guys that may have some minor trade value, and you know, just grab them, put them on our team, and hope they survive training camp so we can flip them. Gerald Green did survive training camp, and admirably so. The one miscalculation I think the Mavericks made was I think they overpaid, let's say, for the likes of somebody like an Aaron Aflalo. While Aflalo is a good player and I think would be able to command a good price on the trade market, the problem is you've now got a $30 million contract, and finding a match for that is going to be hard to do. You're going to have to find someone who has a max deal that's multi-year that they're going to want to get rid of. And frankly, there aren't a lot of those players that are good that are worth having. You're just, you know, flipping your max deal with Aflalo for a max deal with a guy who maybe is not quite as bad, but is not super desirable either. I really like the Morrow signing and the Gerald Green signing. You have a $10 million deal, a $15 million deal. Maybe you package those together. You can take those and, you know, maybe trade Gerald Green for someone on a rookie contract and a couple of veteran minimums, since the vet min this year for older players is up at $2 million. So I think the Mavericks had the right idea. I just think the execution on Aflalo in particular was a little bit lacking. That said, it'll be interesting to see if they find a taker for Bradley Beal. I know they've been kind of shopping him around, but I think he really is the kind of player that they should hang on to and rebuild around. He's 24 years old. They've got him on a nice flat contract for another 3 years. I mean, it's $15 million, so it's not a rookie deal, but it's not a maximum deal or something that's breaking their bank either. They have a couple of nice young big men in Charles Tardif and John Hagerman, so there are pieces there. They're still probably a couple of years away, so I think the Mavericks may have been better set to maybe hang on to a little bit more of that cap space and act as a cap space sink for people that are looking to get out of the luxury tax. You know, if just using an example, if they'd offered Aaron Aflalo $15 million instead of $30 million, They'd be about $10 million under the cap, which would allow them the ability to offer nice flexibility to other teams. So I think the Mavericks are one of those teams where the preseason record is somewhat indicative of what they're going to do this season, barring any trades. Bradley Beal is a good player, but he's not quite ready to carry a squad yet. He's got a couple of nice complementary big men, but no real talent overwhelmingly at point guard. Doesn't have a lot on the wings, not named Bradley Beal, so I think Bradley Beal will put up big numbers, but you're not going to see a big move in terms of playoff push from the Mavericks. I think where the Mavericks may make a big move is absorbing a large contract and getting talent that way. We'll move on to the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans offseason was basically trading for Chris Paul and then re-signing LeBron James and Blake Griffin. It was an offseason that they knew was going to have a hefty price tag. They gave Blake the Supermax, which means he's slated to make $40 million in 2021 if they exercise his contract team option. I'm not 100% sure I like exactly what the Pelicans did. They're rather locked in, I think, to what they can do. They don't have any young assets that they can trade. Their picks are locked in unless they get a 2019 pick, thanks to the Ted Stepien rule. And there's a part of me that wonders if the Pelicans have enough. And, of course, this is the joy of doing live shows. You can sometimes get interrupted. But anyway, to get back to the Pelicans, I think four of their starting five are as good as anybody in the league. We've seen LeBron James, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin prove what they can do. However, the one caveat I have is, number one, they're not deep, and I think that's something that's obvious. And number two, I'm not 100% sure on the fit. And the reason why is, if you take a look at the roster that the Pelicans have put together, they went 4-2 in the preseason. But for me, the big concern is they only have two players that have over a 50 in defensive rebounding. One of them is Blake Griffin with an 81. One of them is Zaza Pachulia with a 59. LeBron James has a 49, so he's close, but you look at their other two, their other spots, and nobody is really a big rebounder, and I think that is where the Pelicans could have an issue. Defensively, they wound up being the worst team in the preseason, averaging 117 points allowed per game. So even though they went 4-2, the reason they were able to do it was they were able to get some close wins. And I don't know how much that's going to hold up against top competition. I mean, they played the Warriors, they played the Mavericks, they played the Trailblazers. They did beat the Suns, they beat the Knicks. But their weakness is definitely inside, and a bigger team is going to be able to push them around. And we're starting to see bigger teams. You've got, for example, the Houston Rockets, who we'll get to later. They've got a big inside presence. The San Antonio Spurs have a big inside presence. So that's something that I think the Pelicans at some point or other will have to address this season, is how are they going to bang inside? They certainly have the scoring to keep up with anybody, but do they have the defense? And I think that's going to be the storyline in New Orleans this season. Moving on to Easy's San Antonio Spurs now. This was a team that made a fairly bold move in the offseason. They traded to bring in DeAndre Jordan from Golden State. Just as I was kind of mentioning earlier, there might be some concerns with the Pelicans inside. You don't have those concerns with the Spurs. DJ is a proven defensive commodity who can put up just enough offense to keep people honest. He's a double-double threat and a threat to go for 4, 5, or 6 blocks a game, so they'll be funneling a lot into him. What will be interesting to me is going to see how the Josh Smith is used in their lineup. he's played just about every position for the Spurs over the years. He's played center, he's played power forward, he played small forward, even some shooting guard. Obviously, with DJ as the center, he's not going to need to play center this year. But I think in the preseason, he was slated as their starting power forward, and they used Glenn Harris as their starting small forward, which is definitely an offense-heavy look. I think they could use Danny Granger at small forward, or if they really wanted to overpower teams, they could try to go with an Amari Stoudemire at power forward, Josh Smith at small forward lineup. So I'm curious to see whether EZ decides to go with a really big lineup or a really small lineup. And of course, you've got, you know, Westbrook and Dennis Schroeder in the backcourt as your starters. Those two have shown that they can score with the best of them. And so I think you're going to see a lot of scoring out of the backcourt, and whether or not EZ puts Stoudemire at power forward and Smith at small forward, or Smith at small forward and somebody else, or Smith at power forward and somebody else at small forward, will tell you a lot of how this team wants to score their points. Do they want to be balanced, or do they want to rely on their dynamic scoring guards? The one worry I would have if I was San Antonio is the depth isn't there like it's been in past seasons. And they're also kind of running low on young assets that they can move. Schroeder is locked in on a RFA contract, so they can't move him. And everybody else is in their prime, or maybe slightly after their prime. They have a lot of expiring contracts, and they don't have a young pick. So they're kind of locked into this roster unless they decide they really want to change the core. There's not a lot of room for tinkering around the edges. And this may be, and this is just me speculating here, this may be a season in which EZ decides to lock in, because if they make it, let's say, to the finals and win, or to the finals and lose, or at least, you know, they're still a championship caliber contender, I can see him locking up Josh Smith on a supermax, and then they'll have basically all of their cap committed to DeAndre, Westbrook, Schroeder, and then you throw Josh Smith's contract on top of that, they're going to be way up in the tax for as long as they put Smith under contract, basically. So, you know, if their core four is enough to win a title, bless them for it. If it's not, I have a hard time seeing how they're going to make adjustments and tweaks and changes without blowing up that core. So, very interested to see if they can repeat. I think they have as good a shot as anybody in the Western Conference. They have proven commodities. They're all in their prime. Maybe Josh Smith is just starting to come out of it at 31, but they have at least another 3, maybe 4 years if they keep the core together that I think they're a viable championship contender. From a multi-year championship contender to a, I would suggest maybe a 1 or possibly 2 year wonder, we move on to the Memphis Grizzlies. They finished 5-1 in the preseason, so they had a magnificent preseason. And I think this is the team that Louis expected to have all along when he drafted Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler, 6, 7 years ago now? Let's see, they have 6 years of experience. So yeah, it was 7 years ago. Butler has shown to be an offensive stud on the wing over the course of his career, and doesn't look like anything changed in the preseason. Kawhi is decent, not great. But I think the key in terms of offense has been adding LaMarcus Aldridge. He gives them the pure scoring threat that they needed. And one of my philosophies team building is you can get away with 1 and possibly 2 glue guys in your starting lineup, but you need at least 3 scorers. And they have one of those glue guys in Rajon Rondo. He can set up Kawhi, he can set up Butler, he can set up LaMarcus. So he works very well to complement their scorers and also provides them with a lot of defense. I think the Grizzlies will be good this year. Obviously, the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about is the Grizzlies are currently sitting with a 154-point tax bill, which means they will not be able to re-up their core. It means that, you know, they're going to have to pick up a lot of points and picks over the next couple of years via trade. And the problem that they're going to have is they're going to stack yet another huge tax bill on top of that this season. Their $149 million payroll is like $60 million over the cap, and I haven't figured out exactly how many points that is, but I would dare say that's probably looking another 150, 200 points. So the Grizzlies, while they have a chance to go for it this year and possibly next year, but I wouldn't bet on it because after this year, LaMarcus Aldridge is a free agent. I don't think they'll be able to get him back on a minimum. The Grizzlies have to ask themselves, do we want to make a go of it this year, or do we just bite the bullet and start trading off pieces and get young assets that we can control long term? I think you can probably survive a trip into the luxury tax wilderness for a couple of years if you've got young players or picks or cost control pieces on long-term contracts so that you don't have to get rid of those and you don't lose them for nothing early. But I don't see many of those pieces currently on the Grizzlies. In order to get there, they would have to give up their key forks. I don't think anybody is taking Alec Burks at this point. Again, it's a season where the Grizzlies could conceivably go for it. If they do, I think it makes their journey back from the luxury tax that much harder. But, you know, is winning a championship worth it? If they think they have a legitimate shot, maybe they do that. I don't know. I would suspect the Grizzlies, though, are a team where if we get to Sim 5 or 6, and they're not one of the clear-cut favorites, if they're, you know, seeded, let's say, 6th or lower in the West, I think they will probably try to start cutting bait, at least on LaMarcus Aldridge. But you wonder if they decide, you know, we need to move Kawhi and Jimmy now while we can still get some value for them instead of waiting until next year when they're expiring and they're older and their value will be lower. So this is a very pivotal season for the Grizzlies, and this season in a lot of ways affects probably their next 5 or 6 seasons. Just based on the path they decide to go down. Which, you know, seems to be a common theme as we're here in the Southwest. A lot of the Southwest teams are built for now, and, you know, they're definitely contenders now, but 3 years down the road, you think just about all of them could be in big trouble. And that brings us to the team that finished first place, at least by point differential, in the preseason sim, and that's the Houston Rockets. 78 was able to pick up Chris Bosh in the offseason. Ty Lawson is still looking fairly productive. But if you look at that roster, the way they performed in the preseason, you had Al Horford scoring 18 a game, Chris Bosh scoring 18 a game, Thaddeus Young scoring 18 a game, Elliot Williams scoring 15 a game. So it's a balanced attack. They don't have any great weaknesses across the board. So I think the opportunity is there. Well, I guess they do have a weakness in free throws, but I think the opportunity is there for the Rockets this season, and we seem to say this every year. I think the opportunity is there for the Rockets to be a contender this season. The one thing that I think the Rockets have that maybe some of the other potential contenders out of the Southwest don't is they have more flexibility with their cap. They're over the cap this year, but they have a lot of guys on team options next year, the year prior, or in the year after. So they will be able to drop under the cap if they need to. They'll be able to get themselves to a place where they don't have to worry about racking up enormous long-term luxury tax bills, and they have the ability to shed their salary and shed their roster and get a reset in. I think the Rockets would like to compete this year. If they don't, I think they're also fine starting to blow things up and rebuild. They don't have their pick in 2019, so I would suspect that any moves the Rockets make will be, I don't want to say short-term at the cost of long-term, but they'll be more focused on short-term. They're not going to want to bring in a large long-term contract unless it's someone really, really good. At the same time, I think they would probably like to be good at least through next season, and then they can hit the rebuild button in 2020 when they have their own pick again. So Yeah, just the thing that really impresses me about the Rockets squad is the balance, and that really does come from picking up Chris Bosh. I know they lost Lance Stephenson in the offseason, but if you look at the Rockets squad over the last 3 years, every year we thought they were a title contender, and every year they've started out hot and then they faded. And so the core they had wasn't working, and whether it was voluntary or involuntary, they've shuffled their core a little bit. They've gone from a team that is outside-focused to inside-focused. And I know you'll say, well, you know, they had Al Horford before, and yeah, they did, but Al Horford is a jump-shooting kind of guy. I mean, he tends to play on the perimeter. You look at his jump shot, he's got an 80 in it, and one of the things that I've noticed is guys with a high jump shot tend to float out and, you know, shoot jump shots more. He's got a low jump score, which, again, tends to correspond to floating out and shooting jump shots more. So even though they had Al Horford at center, he really is a perimeter-oriented guy. Bosh is more of an inside force. And so I think having Bosh there gives them the balance that they didn't have before. It also gives them balance between front court and back court. They'll be able to score from anywhere, and I think that showed up in the statistical distribution of points over the preseason. So as far as, you know, where the Rockets are going this season, I think they're one of the favorites to win the division. You get the sense in this division that you've got a lot of good teams. Each of them is a little bit older. You know, they've got veteran players. Their players are generally on large salaries, and these are teams that are built to win for 2-3 years, and then they're all going to have to reset, except the Mavericks are maybe a year or two ahead of schedule, and that they're already resetting. So if I were to pick someone who I thought would be leading the division, let's say in 4 or 5 years, I think it'll be the Mavericks, because they'll have the time to start accumulating those young pieces. But they're definitely going to wind up fifth in the division this year, and it's going to be a rough back and forth in the division among the other four teams. I think the Rockets, the Spurs, the Pelicans, and the Rockets, the Spurs, the Pelicans, and the Grizzlies, all have the opportunity to win. The Grizzlies are built a little differently than the other three. The Grizzlies are wing-heavy. The other three are kind of big-heavy. Well, I take that back. I would say the Pelicans are not big-heavy. But I think this will be an interesting division to watch, because it's going to be competitive all year, and you've got some heavyweights that are going to be slugging it out with each other. So with that, I'm going to take a quick break to go grab a glass of water, and we'll come back, and when I get back, we'll start in on the Pacific Division. So I appreciate you hanging with me this long. It's gone a little longer than I thought, but we'll see what we do as we get out to the break, and we'll be back in a bit, although for you it'll be just a few seconds, before we're discussing the Pacific Division.
Do you remember the days when water was water? I'm talking about real water, straight from the faucet. No bubbles, no fancy flavors or filtering, no exotic-sounding foreign names. Just a tall, cool glass of water straight from your kitchen sink. Well, thanks to the folks at Tap Water Beverages, those memories are as close as the bottled water aisle of your local supermarket. You see, the tap water bottling process captures all of the lead, bacteria, mercury, and traces of actual raw sewage that gives tap water that distinctive flavor you remember from your childhood. And yes, they even remembered the fluoride. Woo-hoo! Tap water. Taste the memory.
July is National Baked Bean Month. Excuse me. Yes, a month in which we pay tribute to one of America's favorite, most healthful, and nutritious foods. I'm terribly sorry. As I was saying, good Lord, this is terribly embarrassing. I'm so...
Whoa, doggy!
I guess I'd better wrap this up quick. Basically,
Jesus, whoa! Oh, God! My God!
Baked beans. They're nature's way of saying, for God's sake, open a window. Sorry.
All right, so we are back. Got a drink of water, paid a few fake bills with sim commercials there, and we're going to move on and start talking about the Pacific Division. So in the Pacific Division, last season, obviously the Warriors kind of ran away with things, and they've rebuilt. So I think the division is wide open, and we'll start with the team that finished in last place in the preseason, and that is the Los Angeles Lakers. The story of the Lakers for the last couple of seasons has been the same old, and it keeps being the same old. Don't insure our players, watch training camp destroy them, and take a team that once was young and promising and now is just disappointing. Joel Embiid, 3-4 years ago, looked like he could be a monster. Now he looks like he could be a monstar after they had to get their powers back. Kendrick Perkins is getting a little bit older, but that's to be expected. DeMarcus Cousins has been a disappointment pretty much his entire career. Giannis Antetokounmpo looked like he was on the fast track to becoming a star, got paid in free agency, restricted free agency, and took the normal post-RFA hit to all of his attributes. I guess they still have Gustave Lacroix, who has not yet grown into his potential. He of the F handles. And Brandon Jennings, who in the lost episode of the Andy and Josh show was described as a guy who's just going to chuck it and chuck it and chuck it, and I think that's a pretty accurate description. Brandon Jennings suffers under the delusion, I think, on the Lakers team that he is the best player on the team, and thanks to all the training camps destroying all their younger players, he might be, but he's also one of the least efficient players on the team, a 52% shooting percentage in the preseason notwithstanding. And if you're counting on Brandon Jennings and his career 42% shooting to show up in the regular season, I think you're probably right on the mark there. Jennings is a very streaky shooter, and he's taken it upon himself to just shoot the heck out of the ball. And honestly, I think the sooner the Lakers can be rid of Brandon Jennings, the better. That may be tough with a $21 million a year contract over the next 3 years. The Lakers, like I said, it's just a team that screams disappointment. You know, Embiid, Cousins, Antetokounmpo, Lacroix, all of them could be really, really good. They've never really seemed to gel. They're not protected from hits in training camp by insurance. And this is a team that's the poster child for why we have training camp insurance. I think if they had stayed insured, even with multiple hits, they might not be good now, but you might be able to look at their roster and say, okay, in 2 or 3 years, once training camp finally gives them a break from destroying them, they'll be a beast. But, you know, potential has gotten more people fired, both in sim NBA and the real NBA, than probably anything else. And this is a team that is all potential and no talent, and I think we're going to have the same thing happen. I really wish, you know, Trey would pick one or two players to build around. If it was me, probably that's Antetokounmpo and Lacroix, and just, you know, admit we're rebuilding and blow it up rather than keep trying. Because going back to war with the same group of players that sucked last year and sucked the year before and sucked the year before that just doesn't seem like it's a winning strategy. You know what they say about insanity? It's doing the same thing and expecting different results. So that's it on the Lakers. I don't want to keep belaboring the point, because Lakers, I wish they would do better, but they just never do, and that just makes me sad. So we move now to the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are in the process of kind of reconfiguring their roster, at least in theory, to try to duck under the tax line. I don't know if they're going to be able to make it even over the next 2 seasons. Kyle Lowry's contract is kind of the anchor on that team, because you know they want to hang on to Gobert. But the Warriors, I think, are doing a good job of accumulating young pieces on the fly. They still have Brian Stark, they have Rudy Gobert, they have James Peacock, they have Brennan Brisson. So they've got guys that are going to be doing all right. And we know that Ben, because he's stepping back a little bit thanks to schooling, is probably more focused on having a team that will compete in 3 or 4 years. So I suspect We'll see more moves kind of building around trying to compete again once Gobert hits his prime. And we all know that there's ebbs and flows in life in Sim League, and you know, we get that sometimes you're more into it than others and sometimes you're more busy than others. And so you know, good luck with school, Ben. We'll be happy to see you back and fully engaged once you get everything taken care of. And until then, I suspect the Warriors, they won't be tanking, but they'll be in asset accumulation mode. So I don't think they're going to be pushing all their chips on the table to go for a championship. They'll be more looking to accumulate multiple pieces and see in a year or two or three where they've landed and where they can go from there. Moving on to the third place team in the preseason, the LA Clippers. The Clippers, again, are the Kevin Durant show. Roy Hibbert, they brought back in free agency. Bismack Biyombo, they kept. They gave Biyombo a little bit of training, but you know, honestly, what the Clippers have needed for a while, and what they haven't had, is they needed somebody to take the scoring load off of Durant at some point. I know, you know, Durant back in the day was able to basically haul the Clippers to a title on his own, but he's hit the ripe old age of 29, which is when players generally peak and start coming on the downside. Their other key players are Grevas Vasquez and Roy Hibbert. They're both 30. And then Bismack Biyombo, who is 25, but has never looked like he's going to be an offensive force. And so I think for the Clippers, the priority now needs to be trying to win while Durant is still capable of, you know, absolute destruction. You know, he got a huge contract. He'll be making $44 million in 2020. Now, the good news is they've done a good job of keeping large contracts other than Biyombo's away from him long-term, and Biyombo will be up after next season. So the Clippers, in theory, could reset around Durant next season, but after watching the Suns struggle to reset around Kevin Love, I'm not sure that's the way they want to go. They really need to figure out how to get in, like I said, another scorer and kind of work from there, even if it costs them some of their defensive identity, because their defensive identity or their team identity has been defense. Hibbert and Biyombo are a great pair of rim protectors. They do a great job rebounding, and then they let Kevin Durant score all the points. But if they could find a way to get some more production out of their backcourt, I think they could become scary. I'm not sure how they get there, because they don't have a lot of assets really to trade away at this point. So I think we're going to see another season of the Clippers being a good team, probably a top four or five team in the West, but not quite having enough to make it over the hump on those days when Durant is having a slow day in the playoffs. So it looks as though we've got two teams left. The Sacramento Kings. The Sacramento Kings are historically one of the best teams in the league, and I know that may come as a surprise to some of our newer GMs, but Tanny has always had a knack of turning players in their prime into young players who are just as good, but 4 or 5 years younger, and stockpiling draft picks. And I think everybody is excited this year to finally see the debut of Jeffrey Duren, who he has been sitting on and sitting on and sitting on for the last couple of seasons. Now, of course, the flip side is, you know, Nerlens Noel, who he's been hanging on to forever, took kind of a hit in training camp. But I think overall, if you look at the Kings, they have a very nice mix of youth and experience. Obviously, it's a team that's going to be led by Derrick Rose this year. But I think, you know, they're a little lightweight in the front court. I think the Noel hit in training camp hurt him a little bit. You know, obviously he had TC insurance, so that helps. But, you know, the Kings are very, very good in the backcourt, and I think a little bit lightweight in the front court. And this is kind of one of the reasons that I put out there on the questions for the Josh and Andy podcast, whether or not you think the league is going to a more interior-oriented style of play or a more exterior-oriented style of play, because I'm starting to notice teams are kind of picking one side or the other. You know, we talked a lot about in the Southwest Division that there are a lot of inside-focused teams. If you take a look at, you know, the Clippers, you could probably say that they're inside-focused. Maybe it's a little more of a defensive-focused, but I mean, Kevin Durant is a small forward who they often play at power forward, so they're inside-focused too. And the Kings are definitely outside-focused. And so, you know, again, this is a team that I think has a, you know, a chance to make some noise, but it's a team that's flawed, just like every team we've looked at so far, which, honestly, I think that's kind of cool. That's part of the thing that makes the league exciting, is when there's not one overwhelming favorite that you know is just unstoppable in every way, because then it can get into matchups. You know, it might be a team that matches up well with, you know, these three teams over here, but it matches up poorly with, you know, two other teams. And so it becomes, you know, a contrast of styles, which makes for really interesting and unpredictable results. And so we'll finish off the Pacific Division by taking a look at the Phoenix Suns. Now, the Suns, of course, we know are the Kevin Love and Company show. And the Suns are another team that is going big. They have Gorgui Dieng, who they picked up in RFA through sign and trade. They picked up Andras Bjelkovic. They picked up Al Jefferson. And then to give them some backcourt punch, they've got Danny Green and Wesley Matthews, who I know is listed as a small forward, but is going to play shooting guard on a team like this. This is a big team. You could even see Kevin Love playing at small forward. The one thing they lack, and again, we talked about this, every team seems to have a weakness, is they lack a pure point guard. And I think defensively, for me, they're a little bit iffy. You know, particularly if you look at, you know, they're fairly strong with Kevin Love, but if you look at the rest of their big men, they're okay defenders, they're not great defenders. You look at their perimeter guys, they're okay defenders, they're not great defenders. So the Suns clearly are going to be relying on a mix of Al Jefferson and Kevin Love to beat teams up down low. I thought it was interesting in the preseason that the computer elected to play Love at power forward and put Al Jefferson coming off the bench. I suspect, at least if I was running things, you know, like Messi would be, I would suspect to see a lot heavier dose of Al Jefferson. You know, this is a guy who is a proven 20-point-a-game-per-night scorer, causes all sorts of matchup problems, and so you can have Wesley Matthews at your shooting guard, Kevin Love at your small forward, Al Jefferson maybe at your power forward, and now you're giving people problems wherever they go, big, little, or in between. Do I think the Suns are a favorite to win the title? No, and the only reason is because I haven't seen them put together a mix around Kevin Love that works yet. They've been good. They've been high 40s, low 50 wins, but I haven't seen deep playoff runs out of them. And so I guess I'm kind of a show-me guy here. You know, this is about the third iteration in 3 years of players they've had around Kevin Love. And so I want to see it work before I say they're a title contender. I think they'll be a playoff team, but I don't know that they're a title contender. So with that, let's close out the Pacific Division. Gosh, we're 44 minutes into the podcast already. I need to pick it up a little bit. And we'll move to the Northwest, the final division in the West. And I might, you know, break this off and have to do the Eastern Conference later. I don't know. I'll try to pick it up just a little bit. The Portland Trail Blazers are obviously a team that's on the rebuild. They kind of sold everybody off last year, doubled down on picking up draft picks, and went out and managed to get a nice unrestricted free agency signing in Jeremy Lamb. They brought back C.J. McCollum. They've added Ronald Small. And then they've got some okay, you know, bigger guys. Audrey Broomfield is listed as a small forward, probably winds up playing power forward, but isn't ready yet. Lawrence Arbogast reminds me a lot of Daniel Randall. Looking at his ratings, You know, he's got mid-50s to 60s in most of his ratings. Not a great defender, but has a very complete offensive game. I could see, assuming he gets the minutes, Lawrence Arbogast putting up, you know, 15 points a game for this team and putting it up consistently because I think he has the offensive talent to do so. You know, they've got Jeff Withey in the middle. That's not going to scare anybody. And a lot like the Pelicans, they don't have really great rebounding on the defensive side. In fact, I mentioned the Pelicans have only one player with more than about a 51 in rebounding defensively. Well, the Blazers have one player with over a 50, and that's Broomfield with a 51. They're going to get crushed on the board. So it's a team that's going small ball, and I think they're going to be bullied and pushed around. There's no two ways about that. But I think, you know, they have some promising pieces here. They just need to find a way to get some bulk in. Maybe they need to go talk to the Wizards and swap some of their small players with some of the Wizards' big players. The next team is Utah. Utah just committed to their rebuild in this offseason when they sent out Paul George and got a handful of draft picks back. Deshaun Hawkins and Robert Neely both look good long term. Neely looks like he might be able to step in and start scoring right away. I think Deshaun Hawkins is a little more of a long-term project. They've got Bogut, they've got Anderson, so they've got some beef and some shooting. So they have some nice pieces. They're not in full tank mode yet, by which I mean Anderson is a veteran player that can produce very well. If they're going to go into full tank mode, they need to get rid of him. They probably can't get rid of Bogut because of his salary. Nobody's going to want to take that, even though he is expiring. So I think next year is when you will see the tank in full effect for the Jazz. But this year, they may as well start getting Deshaun Hawkins and Robert Neely as much playing time as possible, and maybe even Joseph Kite. You know, get those rookie trainings in. But you know, the Jazz, by design, are not going to be going anywhere this year. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Last season, I think I picked them to win the Northwest Division. It wound up going to the Timberwolves. And I liked the way their team fit together. I'm a little less high on them this year. They have Isaiah Thomas and Nikola Vucevic in their primes, and then you've got a young Jabari Parker who is looking like he could make the, you know, the step this year. He led them at, or he was second in scoring in the preseason, but you know, they're a potent offensive lineup. You know, in the preseason, you've got Vucevic putting in 20 a game, Isaiah Thomas putting in 26 a game, Parker putting in 23 a game. So they've got the defense. What they lack at this point, or they've got the offense, excuse me, what they lack is the defense. If you look at, you know, how the preseason went for them, they were second overall in offense, which looks about right, but they were second to worst in defense. So, you know, you look at their steals, they don't do very well. You know, rebounding, they're okay, but again, you look at their defensive ratings, perimeter defense, post defense, nobody's really a stopper on that team. Isaiah Thomas is the closest thing they come to a perimeter stopper. But he's, you know, he's got his problems in that he's 5'9". Guys are going to be able to shoot over him. So I think it's a team that, you know, is kind of fun to watch. They're going to have a lot of scoring. But I don't know that they have the depth of talent or enough overall skill to make a deep playoff run. This is a team that I think could be hanging around. They'll be one of the teams in contention for the 7th and 8th spot out west, but I don't think anybody really fears them. That leaves us with two teams, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who finished 4-2. Now, the Timberwolves, they're an interesting case. They've been very patient, doing a slow build around Otto Porter Jr. and Andrew Wiggins. This was the year that Porter got his big raise, and Wiggins is in line for a big raise next season. So they're, you know, fortunately they have Ish Smith coming off the books, so they're going to have the opportunity to try to bring somebody else in. They're a team that is fairly potent offensively. Again, the defense is a little bit of a concern to me. They don't have guys that can really shut people down inside, and as long as they play against the perimeter-oriented teams in the playoffs, I think they'll be okay. But if they run up against a Houston, if they run up against the Spurs, I think they could be in big trouble. So again, this is kind of what I mentioned before, going on matchups. They match up, they cause matchup problems on the wings for other teams, but they're susceptible to matchup problems inside. So I think they'll be able to have a very competitive season. They may be in the 50-win range. And they will be scary in the playoffs because Wiggins has shown he is the truth in the playoffs. He showed that last year. But do they run into a team that can take advantage of him inside the playoffs? I think that is going to determine how far the Timberwolves go this season. It's that simple. It's matchups. And that's the first time I can remember saying that about the PBSL in quite some time, is that, you know, we're looking less at, you know, overall talent and more at matchups, because every team has holes. And that puts us, you know, finally to the team that led the Northwest in the preseason, and that's the Nuggets. The Nuggets are almost entirely perimeter-oriented, with Darren Collison, Jrue Holiday, Buddy Hield, Klay Thompson. You know they're going to be shooting it and shooting it and shooting it. They've got Stephen Hunter, who is way past his prime at 36, but is still a decently effective rim protector and interior defender. And they picked up Michael Beasley in a trade in the offseason from the Jazz. They basically gave up nothing for him, so I really like that trade for the Nuggets. He fit a position of need. They needed somebody who could score in the front court. Beasley gives them a bit of an offensive threat. I don't know that I would favor the Nuggets to win the Northwest. I think I have to favor the Northwest going to the Timberwolves. But I think the Nuggets will be a force to be reckoned with. I think a lot of it comes down to fouls. Can Stephen Hunter stay out of foul trouble and keep himself on the floor long enough to be a deterrent at the rim? I don't think that'll be too big of an issue, but if he does have problems with it, you know, they could be in trouble. And then the other part of it comes down to how hot are they shooting that night. When you have guys like Klay Thompson, Jrue Holiday, Darren Collison, they're going to shoot a lot of jump shots. And some nights the jump shots are going, and they're going to win. And sometimes the jump shots are not going, and they're going to lose. So I think the Nuggets have a much higher variance than maybe the Timberwolves do. They might win games bigger, but they also might lose games bigger. And I think that kind of inconsistency does not bode well for a team that wants to make a deep playoff run. But, you know, again, it all comes down to matchups. As long as they can avoid being taken advantage of in the middle, I think they're okay. And with Stephen Hunter, I think they have a fighter's chance of matching up with a team that is strong inside, having Stephen Hunter kind of nullify that and having their guards just outplay the other team's guards. And if they manage to do that, they are a team that is quite capable of knocking out anybody in the playoffs. So, you know, again, it just goes back to parity. It goes back to matchups. It goes back to how teams are looking. I'm going to take another quick break to go grab a sip of water again. Going to come down the home stretch, kind of zip through the Eastern Conference because I want to get this done and posted before we get to the sim that's going to happen. And running a little short on time. So with that, I'll step out and be back shortly. We'll hit the Eastern Conference. We'll do it a little faster. It'll be more of a fast break style. And we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks for calling the Movie Ending Phone. Press 1 for a brief introduction to our service. Press 2 if you know which movie you'd like to hear the ending to. Press 3 for movies near you that are almost over. We understand that you don't have time to sit in a dark movie theater with people you don't know. That's where the Movie Ending Phone comes in. Just press the number on your touchtone pad that corresponds to the movie you wish you had seen. The defendant in Primal Fear is just faking it. Why deal with high admission prices, bad popcorn, and sticky floors? Steve Buscemi ends up in a wood chipper. Why let the person next to you ruin the movie for you when you can do it yourself? The killers in Scream are the boyfriends. Let your friends talk about all the movies they want. You'll never have to cover your ears again. Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze. And he's the killer in Seven, the movie ending phone. You'll never have to leave the house again. Darth Vader is still Luke's father.
So we're back after that brief water break. Thanks for holding with us. So we're going to move on now to the Southeast Division. Last season it was not competitive. This season it's going to be a lot more competitive, so I think that's exciting for everybody. Briefly, we'll go through the Wizards. The Wizards had a squad that had several talented players on it, and then training camp came along and took it all away. Interestingly enough, they've got a couple of current real-life Laker young ones in Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson, both of whom were slapped down unmercifully by training camp. But they also made a move to acquire Carmelo Anthony. Training camp kind of ruined him. Now, we know Exist is one of the nicer guys in the league, and I thought it was interesting. His reaction to training camp was fairly understated. This rebuild is going to take longer than I thought. The good news for the Wizards is that they have all of their draft picks. They do have a lot of size, which means they have some players that other teams, particularly in the West, like we were talking about, that might need a little bit of help bulking up. Even, you know, though they might be yellow, that he's got quality size, and they're all on pretty reasonable prices. So I suspect we will see this season the Wizards trying to be an arms dealer, playing both sides of the arms race, and selling off his bigs to the Western Conference as they decide they need to load up near the trade deadline, which should bring him, you know, some young assets, maybe a couple of late draft picks. But at this point, and obviously he knows that he's in a tear it all down, he does not have a, you know, transcendent young star yet, so he's going to be trying to throw as many young players at the wall and see who winds up emerging to lead his squad. Going to be a long season in Washington, which, you know, is kind of disappointing because they were bad last year, but the difference is they didn't have their pick last year. Now they've got their picks the next 3 years, so even if they're bad, they'll at least reap the benefits of it. Moving up the ladder a little bit to the Miami Heat, the Heat had an 0-6 preseason. I think they're going to be a little bit better than that once we get to the regular season. I do worry that the Heat, you know, after having so many seasons with LeBron, were spoiled by his point guardery, if that's even a way of saying the word. Their point guard situation is not good. They've got some good pieces in Greg Monroe and Tobias Harris. I wouldn't call them fake blues. I know that's a term that's been thrown around sometimes, but they're maybe lower end blues. They're going to be productive players, but they're not transcendent players. I think that was kind of shown when we were in the preseason. You know, Harris averaged 18 a game. Greg Monroe averaged 16 a game, which isn't bad. But you would want an alpha player probably averaging around 20, 25, unless he's on, you know, one of these super teams where they got four guys averaging 18 because everybody's good and there's only one ball. They brought in Jimmer Fredette, a perennial favorite here in the PBSL. We'll see if he finally gets a little bit of burn this season. He's never really gotten the chance to do much, but he's, you know, probably the best perimeter shooter on the team. And based on the preseason presser that we had coming out of Miami, it looks like they're going to throw minutes at him. So, you know, he's 28. He's in his prime. You know, this will be his one shot at glory. And then I think the rebuild will continue. I think the Heat are at the point now, yeah, they resisted rebuilding for so long. And then they finally had to kind of knuckle under to the luxury tax. They have some good assets. Valanciunas is one, Caspi, you know, Tobias Harris, as mentioned before. They don't have a transcendent player, so I would suspect they'll be in a mode where they're listening to all offers. And they've mentioned that everybody on the team is on the block. You know, they're looking to get the next star to build around, and they haven't got him yet. Just like the Wizards, they have all their picks. So last season, I think, was kind of a transition year for the Heat as they transitioned out of the tax and started to accumulate assets. They have some good ones this year, so they're going to win some games. But again, I don't know that they're necessarily a playoff squad just yet, but at least the cupboard has some stuff in it. Then we go to one of the teams that made a couple of pretty big splashes in the offseason, and that was the Charlotte Bobcats. I know that on, I think it was Horns and Fangs, Raby was talking about how one of the things to understand about Chad is that he loves to talk, and he can't talk when he's losing. And so we saw the Bobcats, who'd been pretty patient their first couple of seasons, make a move toward the end of last year to pick up John Wall. And then this season, in the offseason, they went and got Enes Kanter. LeVar Ball had a good training camp. Lonzo Ball had a good training camp. He was able to pick up Jordan Hill and Jeff Adrian, who got whacked in TC, but you know, at 31, you kind of expected that. So the Bobcats have some pieces to make a pretty good squad. I think they're probably a true power forward away. I think you know, Kanter is probably their center. The Balls can play the wings. You've got John Wall at guard. And they've got pieces that they can go and try to get a true power forward in there. But if you look at you know rebounding, they were great at rebounding in the preseason. They need some work on you know steals and turnovers. And they could use some more three-point shooting. But they're a squad that's still pretty young. You know, their oldest, their core four is Wall. He's 27. Means you got another, you know, probably 3-4 years before he starts falling off. And Kanter at 25 probably still has a little room to improve. And then both of the Balls are going to continue improving. So it's a team on the rise, probably a fringe playoff team. I don't know that they necessarily make the playoffs because the other divisions in the East are pretty competitive. But I think they're at least in the hunt up until the last sim or two if they don't make it, and they may even squeak in as a 7 or 8 seed. The pieces are there. We know Chad's impatient. We know he will probably try to make a move to bring in you know that stretch four who can rebound that he's missing. For those that have been around a long time, the Troy Murphy type, the guy who can get you 12 boards and knock down two or three threes a game. So that's kind of where I see the Bobcats going. They're starting to push all in. They probably will not give up on their young pieces unless they're getting a massive upgrade. Second place was the Hawks. They finished 3-3 in the preseason. It was win at home, lose on the road, and that's kind of what I expect for the Hawks this season. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about my own team. The Hawks did make one of the, or were in one of the bigger trades of the offseason when they sent out James Harden for Harland Ellinger and I think it was the number 7 pick. Obviously, and I think I mentioned in my preseason presser, that was a move both for salary and for depth. I had assumed that getting the number 7 pick, I'd be able to pick up a pretty good player, and I thought I did until training camp came around and knocked him out. So that may wind up being one of the trades that I miss on. I think long-term it'll be okay. Harden is 27 or 28 now, so he has another 4 or 5 good years in him. And he is what I think Ellinger will be in about 3 to 4 years, but Ellinger's only 21. So I think you know, I kind of moved my window on when I have a great combo guard from right now to maybe starting in about 3 years in the future. So we'll see you know, over the next few years if that was a good decision or not. Obviously, the pickup of Steph Curry in free agency was huge for me. That really helped offset the loss of Randall and Ellinger not making as big a jump in TC as I had hoped. So, you know, we're kind of rolling back the same squad as last year, a little bit older in the front court, a little bit older in the back court. Yeah, in the front court, that meant decline thanks to age. In the back court, that meant improvement. I thought we overachieved last year at 67 wins. I was expecting mid-50s. I think this team is a little worse. I think we're still a playoff team. I think 50 wins is still realistic. But I don't suspect we will be a title contender this year unless I can find another trade that comes along. We'll see. And that leaves us with the team that went 5-1 in the Southeast, and that's the team that I traded Harden to, the Orlando Magic. The Magic had a lot of draft picks, a lot of young players, and they went all in. They went and picked up James Harden from me. They picked up Paul George from the Jazz. They sent out Vernon DeSantis to bring Thomas Robinson in. Robinson had another great camp. He's looking like a really good player now. You know, 100 in offensive rebound, 100 in defensive rebound, 91 in post defense, and enough inside game to actually make himself a threat. You know, not a threat, but at least you can't ignore him inside. I think he averaged 12 points a game in the preseason, which you'll definitely take from a guy who's supposed to be your fourth or fifth option. Obviously, the guys that stir the drink here are Paul George and James Harden. They were both 28 and 23 points a game. And then they've got other pieces around it. The weakness the Magic had, and again, we talk about, you know, strengths and weaknesses, is they might be a little bit thin. And their backcourt doesn't, I mean, obviously James Harden is very good. Marcus Smart does not scare me, so it'll be interesting to see if they try to drop Paul George on the backcourt and start Saric, or if they decide to, you know, start Marcus Smart. If they do, I think, you know, that kind of worries their backcourt depth a little bit. That said, the Magic are a pretty strong team all around this year. The only thing that jumps out is, you know, maybe they're a little bit foul prone, and so you could get them in trouble with that. And their free throw percentage was atrocious in the preseason. They shot 64% as a team, so that's something, you know, to watch that could be an Achilles heel. You know, they draw a lot of fouls, but they miss a lot of free throws. That said, I think, you know, the Magic, you do have to consider them with two, you know, all league players in Harden and in George, the favorite to win the Southeast this season. I might be able to push them if there's an injury, but I'm not going to count on it. So moving ahead, we'll move to the Central Division. My old stomping grounds. Now, the Central Division, as usual, is pretty tough. The Cleveland Cavaliers finally moved on from Chris Paul last season. And I think they were going to go into a rebuild until they managed to sign Hassan Whiteside in free agency. All of a sudden, you know, you go from a team that has a lot of cap space and a lot of young players that you're hoping will grow to a team that has just used up its cap space and has a really strong guy in his prime to build around in Hassan Whiteside. Now, Whiteside is a defensive type of player, so I think he works very nicely to complement Dirk Hardpeck, who is all offense and not a lot of defense. They have, you know, a nice forward collection. The problem is they've got no backcourt. George Hill, I think, is still definitely a serviceable player and can score it. And I don't know if they use Delonte West, although he's kind of been a chucker throughout his career. I don't know if they try to use Tyler Johnson, who they kind of worked with last year a little bit. I don't know. It'll be interesting to me to see how the Cavaliers get their backcourt in order. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to move a Luol Deng or maybe an Ersan Ilyasova for comparable backcourt player. And again, this goes back to matchup of styles. I think the Cavaliers, because their top player is a defensive-minded player and they've got weaknesses in a couple of other places in the backcourt, I think they may be on the outside looking in, especially in a division as tough as the Central. But I think they're one or two trades away from being able to compete in the Central. And again, I think the guys they'll be trying to move are Deng and Ilyasova, not necessarily for young pieces, but just for, you know, equivalent talent in the backcourt. Or maybe they try to take on a player that, you know, if you combine the salaries of those two, you know, Deng's $4.5 million, Ilyasova's $18 million, so you get $22-odd million there, plus, you know, you can use 25%. You're getting close to being able to absorb a max contract there. So I think, you know, maybe they're one of those teams that's asking about, say, a Kyle Lowry. Although if they ask for Kyle, they might have to throw in, you know, even more salary. But I think they have the pieces that they can package together to get a guy who's on a longer-term deal that another team kind of wants to get rid of and could definitely try to go for a win-now type thing. Or maybe they just grabbed Hassan Whiteside to flip him and want to be patient. But if that's the case, I find it odd that they went out and, you know, got a guy like Deng and Hill and, you know, some older pieces that can still contribute. So we'll see how it goes. They're in a good position to go either way. The next team by preseason finish was the Bucks. They finished fourth. Obviously, this is another team that's extremely strong in the backcourt. You've got Ricky Rubio and Kyrie Irving, who are score first and pass first guards. And I would expect Kyrie puts up 25 to 30 points a game again this year. He's extremely prolific as far as scoring goes. They were able to pick up Evan Turner and trade in the offseason, but the big move that they made was grabbing Damian McNary from the Bobcats. Kind of got him out of Bobcat purgatory. And I don't know that McNary is ready to contribute yet. I'm not sure Andre Drummond has much of an offensive game. So I'm a little concerned about their front court. Ed Davis is a guy that is solid, but not great. Kind of an 8-8, maybe 8-10 rebound guy. Nobody's really afraid of him, though. And he's not like a super shutdown defender either. So if you're looking at the Bucks, I think, you know, they can be exploited a little bit in the front court, and their back court is a little bit small with Irving playing shooting guard. So the flip side of that is the league is trending a little bit smaller with college players. You know, your guards are now 6'5", 6'4", instead of 6'6", 6'7". So that'll be interesting to watch, you know, how the Bucks work. Obviously, it's going to be a lot of scoring from the backcourt, and they're going to ask their front court to just rebound and defend. And I don't know, you know, Drummond can rebound and defend, but I don't know that you can have that many offensive liabilities in the front court and get away with it. I guess we'll see. But the Bucks, you know, they're kind of on a young build. You know, Drummond's 24, McNary's 21, Kyrie is 25, Rubio's a little bit older at 27. But, you know, they're another team that is flexible. They could try to push some of their chips in now and take a shot at the title, or they could just kind of roll with what they've got. And they'll be a playoff team, I think, either way. The next team in the Central, according to preseason finish, is the Bulls. I hate to be the party pooper, but I think the Bulls are... How can I put this? I'm not sure the Bulls necessarily have a direction. I'm not convinced they know where they're going. We know Dragic has been on the block. Hawes has been on the block. They've been on the block since last season. It's clear they're trying to shed some salary and get younger, but they haven't really been able to do it, and so they're in line for a tax bill this year. They've got a mix of old guys. Hawes is 29. Wilson Chandler's 30. Goran Dragic is 31. So not old, but guys that are starting to exit their prime. And then they've got really young guys like Zach LaVine, who's 22, Vernon DeSantis, who's 20. And those two are just not ready to contribute yet. Victor Oladipo is 25, but he is ready to contribute, so he can kind of go either way. But this is a team that has holes at the forward positions. It's a team that doesn't seem to quite fit in terms of the window. You got some guys that are win now, some guys that are win later. So I think something has to give with the Bulls. They're going to have to choose one or the other. It's almost impossible to do both. And I get the sense that they've been leaning toward sell off the old players and get young. You wonder if they got a deal that they felt could put them over the top, if they'd be willing to give up a Zach LaVine or willing to give up a Vernon DeSantis to win now. And I just don't know. It seems like they've kind of committed to going young. And because of that, I think that they'll probably finish behind the Bucks, because at some point they're going to sell off a player for a bit of cap relief and to go from win now to win later. So I think where they finished in third place might be a little bit high by the time the season finishes up. But that's just speculation. They could, again, you know, move some assets on the table to win now and have as good a shot as anybody. You know, they're just kind of in the in-between region where they'll probably make the playoffs, but I don't know if they're a true championship contender. We'll move next to the Pacers. They finished number two in the Central Division in the preseason. They roll back Darren Williams. They roll back Amon Shumpert. It's basically the same team as last year with the addition of DeMar DeRozan, which I really, really like for them, because the one thing they were missing, I thought, last year, and I take that back, Carlos Boozer as well, The one thing they were missing last year, I thought, were some offensive guys to take the load off of Darren Williams, who, you know, great as he is getting to the point where he can't just carry a team on his own anymore. And Boozer and DeRozan are flawed defensively, but they're excellent, excellent offensive players. They've shown they can be 20-point scorers in the league. Even at 35, I still fear Boozer would put up 20 on our team. And DeMar DeRozan is 28. You know, training camp has kept him from being maybe what he could have been when he was drafted, but he's still been an excellent, excellent player. You look at him for their careers, DeRozan averages 18 for his career. Boozer averages 22 for his career. So they finally have, and maybe it's a couple years too late because DeRozan is 33, they finally have offensive weapons around Williams. And, of course, Iman Shumpert has turned into a magnificent 3-and-D player. So they've got the pieces now. I think this is probably, you know, they might have another year with this core, but this is really their last shot with their current core, especially with both Greg Oden and Darren Williams coming up for free agency next season. Somebody is going to offer Darren Williams a huge, huge contract, whether it's the Pacers or whether it's another team. And if the Pacers aren't ready to pony up, they're probably going to lose Williams. But once you give that huge contract to Williams, that basically locks you in. And so I think this season is very pivotal for the Pacers. I think they have the opportunity to make a deep run. But if they don't, I think they decide to let Darren Williams go or to assign and trade. But I don't think they're going to commit to another 4 or 5 years of Darren at the salary he's going to command. I think they're ready to roll it out and start over at that point. Just because you don't want to be paying a 37 or 38 Darren Williams half your cap. You know, so again, if they do well, they probably bring him back and they probably try it. But if things blow up on him, this could be Williams' last season in Indiana. And finally, we go to the Detroit Pistons. I'm probably not saying anything too radical or unsuspected when I say that Anthony Davis is probably the best player in the league. He was a defensive player of the year last year. I would be shocked if he's not the MVP this season. He's just amazing. And Kevin Love now has help. Anthony Davis still doesn't. So that's going to take his stats down a little bit. I mean, yes, we had the addition of Lance Stevenson. He's still got, you know, his perimeter snipers and Kyle Singler and Bojan Bogdanovic. Ramon Sessions and Aaron Brooks, if you put them together, probably make a decent point guard, not a great point guard. I think the biggest obstacle to them taking the next step this season actually is Otis Jackson taking a step back in training camp. Otis has been a solid but not great center now. He's kind of an iffy center, which means more of the load is going to fall on Davis. I think it helps that, you know, they have Lance Stevenson in there. He gives them another option that can do a lot of stuff. And Lance Stevenson is a tremendous defensive rebounder. You know, you look at that 74 rating, and that tells you that he is going to help take a little bit of pressure off of Jackson and Davis on the boards. And I think that is huge because the Pistons are going to hammer you inside with Anthony Davis. And if they have a guy on the perimeter who's also hammering you inside, that just makes them that much tougher. I think the Central Division, and I don't think I'm surprising anybody, is the Pistons to lose. And it's not because I love all the other pieces, it's because I think they have it. They showed last season they were good. Adding Lance Stevenson, I think, gives them a big enough shot in the arm, and it also helps that they're not starting Rodney Hood, who I hate to say it, I can't stand his game. He's inefficient, he's a chucker, and just, you know, I think addition by subtraction is good there. Moving Hood to the bench and starting Stevenson is a good thing, not just because of Stevenson, but also because it subtracts Hood. I really wish last season that they had used more lineups with Singler and Bogdanovic at their wings instead of relying on Rodney. But that's neither here nor there. If they can find a way to bring in a point guard, they will be frightening. Now they may, you know, they may be able to do that by moving. You know, they've got Sessions and Brooks for salary. They've got Gerard Stepp, who looks like he could be promising as a center in 2 to 3 years. But Singler's 29, Bojan's 28, Stevens is 27, AD is 24. So he's still got a lot in him. But most of their core players, this is their time. So I would suspect and suggest that the Pistons look for a way to move a Gerard Stepp and maybe an Otis Jackson to get some help for AD now. Because what's going to happen is those older players are going to age out and you're going to be back to just AD without stuff around him. So with that, let's hurry down the home stretch. We've got the Atlantic Division remaining. The Celtics, I think we can touch on very quickly. The Celtics had a draft where they picked up the likes of D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. They're still trying to find a taker for Kenneth Faried. It's clear that they are in rebuild slash tank mode. So I do not expect the Celtics to make the playoffs. I expect them to play a lot of young players, try to pick up those rookie contract training minutes. And they may be good down the road, but this season they're going to be bad. And it's just because they're playing young talent that, while they will be good, is not there yet. And I don't want to belabor the point with Boston. The Raptors. The Raptors got absolutely devastated by the tax. I kind of mentioned it early on. This is the team that basically had the tax make sure they couldn't reoffer it to their own players. So once all those players' contracts expired, they got ripped apart. The Raptors are going to be bad this season. The good news for them is they have their own pick. I would be surprised, because the Raptors have very little flexibility thanks to the restrictions the luxury tax puts on them in terms of bringing in players via free agency. But what they do have is they do have a couple of players with some potential that are young, and they have a lot of cap space. I would be shocked if the Raptors do not use their cap space to absorb other contracts along with young players or picks. We know Wave is a shrewd judge of talent. We know Wave does not like to sit on his hands and do nothing. I think the Raptors' priority this season will not be winning games. They'll probably be one of the worst teams in the league. But I think their priority will be getting their house in order, getting enough points and enough young assets to kickstart a rebuild in earnest next season, and they'll probably have a pretty high draft pick after losing a lot this season. So it's not an ideal place to be in, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. He's, I think, 31 points away from paying his tax. Just participating in media and pressers this year will get him there. So not going to expect much winning from the Raptors this season, but I expect Wave will be back on track and in the thick of things within a year or two. The New York Knicks finished 2-4 in the preseason. That, I think, was a little bit of a surprise to most people who think, the Knicks are the team to beat, not just in the Atlantic, but in the East. Obviously, we know training camp kind of hammered Nikola Jokic a little bit after a breakout season last year. Fortunately, he was insured, so that might push him back 1 year in terms of his timetable. But I suspect, in a couple of years, when he's 24 years old, he'll be fine. The problem is, Jeremy Lin is 29, Rudy Gay is 31, Chandler Parsons 29, so they have guys, and Tyson Chandler, of course, is 35. The Knicks are a team that is win now. They have a couple of pieces for the future with Jokic and Harris, but it's a win now team. So you wonder, are they willing to wait for Jokic to come back, or do they try to trade for somebody who's maybe a little farther along, not old, but in the 24, 25, 26 range? To kind of line their window up a little bit better for this squad to make a push. I think the record of 2-4 in the preseason was a bit of an illusion. I think they will be better once we get into the regular season. And they better be, because they don't have their own pick this year. They don't have their own pick in 2020. So I would suspect that the Knicks are going to have to kind of pick themselves up, figure out a way to win this year with what they've got. I think they have the pieces to do it. And they're one of the teams that is balanced. They have good bigs. They have good backcourt players. And that's why I think they have a very good chance of coming out of the East. We've talked a lot of teams are either backcourt heavy and their front courts are bad, or the front court's heavy and the back court is bad. The Knicks are one of those rare teams that have quality up and down the lineup. And, you know, could their depth be better? Yeah, but they've got pretty good depth as well. You know, Gortat can still play in the middle. Damari Carroll can still play on the wing. We saw that last year in the playoffs. So I think the Knicks will be okay. The next team, we're our second to last team here, is the Philadelphia 76ers. They had a very good training camp. The Sixers are getting there. I would say they're not there yet. Obviously, they've kind of been collecting young talent. They've got Markelle Fultz, they've got Ben Simmons, they've got Chet Dooley that will be good but aren't there yet. Van Grimaldi made a nice step this year. Gordon Hayward is obviously a stud, and Kemba Walker is a stud. The 76ers can be taken advantage of on the inside, so that could be a matchup problem come the playoffs. But I think the 76ers, this year is kind of a bonus. Whatever they get this year, they'll be happy. They're really looking for, next year and the year after, as Simmons and Fultz and Dooley all really start coming into their own. It's a squad. The one thing that worries me about that is when Scott won his last championship, it was a squad that I think he felt was a year away, and they jumped up and won the title. And so you never know. He may have a squad that everybody thinks is a year away, but is going to jump up and win the title. That said, I think it's a year away. I think he'll be good this year. I think he's going to be in the playoffs, and I think he'll be well in the playoffs, probably a 4, 5, 6 seed. But ultimately, I don't think they quite have enough yet to get over the hump, but I don't expect him to be doing a lot of selling off because he knows in a year or two or three, this team's going to be scary. The one thing they need maybe is a true center, but he's got time to be patient and pick that up. So look for big things out of the Philadelphia 76ers next season, and look for them to be trying to quietly pick up that last piece to the puzzle that might let them make the jump this year. And then finally, the Brooklyn Nets. We're coming up almost on 90 minutes here, so we're looking pretty good here. Brooklyn Nets have Tyreke Evans, who they managed to swipe in free agency. That was, I think, a big get for them to go with Gallinari and Pedraza. They picked up Randolph in free agency. So the big question for the Nets is, have they built enough defense around Gallinari and Pedraza? Those two are terrific scorers at the forward spots. Ibaka is a decent offensive player. And a pretty good defensive player, not the best, but can swat shots and get rebounds for you. Individually, his defense leaves a little bit to be desired. But the Nets are a team that I think is going to have to try to win via offense. And the one thing that I really think they could use, and I don't think I'm shocking anybody by saying this, is I think they could probably use an upgrade at point guard. Not that Medina isn't good. He's going to be good, but he's not there right now. And if you look at outside of Pedraza, the rest of their core is 28, 29. Pedraza's their future. Medina might be their future, might not be. But Pedraza is effective now, and Medina is not. So I would guess the biggest priority in Brooklyn right now is finding a point guard who's ready to play now that they can bring in to get him over the hump, even if it winds up costing him Zach Randolph for depth, might cost him something else. But they need a point guard, and they may not need him to be better potentials than Medina is, but they need him to be much better now than Medina is, because in the preseason they started Shane Larkin, and that did not work. He gave them almost nothing. So that, that is the one thing the Nets need. I'm sure they know it, and I'm sure they're looking for it. So just expect a move from the Nets, and I think once they make that move and they get that more solid point guard in there, they're going to be scary. So we're just coming up on 90 minutes now. I've got about 30 seconds left before I hit the 90-minute mark. We've covered every team. I think we've covered most of the big transactions. I think the Nets will wind up competing with the Knicks for the Atlantic, though I think the Knicks take it. So that's it. We're going to give it a rest at this point. We'll put the podcast up. Looking forward to the sim. And again, hopefully once a week or so, we'll check in on the league, and I'll be able to react, and we'll see how that goes. This has been your Commissioner Wig Chat with a Cat. We're closing out this session of Taking It Slow.